of Bethany. No, I don't expect that you really remember who exactly that is. There's so many Marys, of course. I'm just one more. I'm frequently confused with my friend Mary of Magdala, and she gets confused whenever there's a scandal available at hand, they just typecast her in the role. No, I am Mary of Bethany. My sister is Martha, my brother is Lazarus. We all live together and are unmarried by choice, so find your scandal there if you must. Hopefully you remember my brother Lazarus. There are two Lazaruses in your Bible, so I suppose you might be confused, but my brother Lazarus is the one who got really sick and was dying, and we called Jesus to come and help and heal him, and then he died. And we anointed and wrapped his body and placed it in the tomb, and then Jesus showed up. My brother is responsible for the shortest verse in your Bible. Jesus wept. I will never forget how he broke down that day. And then, of course, by some strange, unexpected miracle, he brought him back, and our brother was back with us again. Wow. You probably are not confused about Martha, my sister. She is her own person, and there's no one else like her. She puts food on the table, and I mean a lot of food. We don't have servants, we're not rich, we don't have people to do these things for us, but last year, Martha calculated exactly how many orphan children we could feed and still have enough left to host the disciples whenever they came through. I tell you, you don't mess with Martha. And she's articulate. When Lazarus died, she went out to meet Jesus in the road, and she said to him, "Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, the one who is coming into the world." That got written down. You know what they say about Martha? Martha is the spokeswoman for the faith of the Johannine community. I found that in one of your commentaries. Well, sister spokeswoman, I'm just another Mary. Spokeswoman for nothing. Nobody wrote down my words. They don't remember what I thought or said. They do remember what I did, at least in parts. I think it's so funny. In your Bible, you've got your four Gospels. I don't know how you ended up with only four, but you've got four different versions of my story. Matthew and Mark unnamed me entirely. They left my name out. Luke transformed me into a sinner woman who was weeping at Jesus' feet and drying the tears with her hair. He had some point to make about forgiveness. And John got it mostly right, but he left out the words Jesus said. Jesus said, when he told them to leave me alone, he said, "Truly I tell you, wherever the good news is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in remembrance of her." I think it's so funny. Everywhere the good news is told, it will be proclaimed that some woman did something with her hair and or tears and or perfume and Jesus. It will be said in remembrance of her, whoever she is. Well, it was me. And I would be honored if you today would remember me. Here's what I did. I broke convention. I've done that before. I let my hair down in mixed company. I broke rank. I claimed for myself the role of a prophet, though nobody gave it to me, a prophet who anoints a king. I broke the bank. It was an expensive gift. I broke the handle of the jar open so nobody could ever use it again, and I poured every last drop of oil out. I anointed Jesus' head like you do for a king. I poured it out over his feet like you do for your loved ones when you're preparing to put them in the tomb, like I did for my brother. So there he was, anointed like a king without a kingdom and like a corpse but fully alive, and I guess I shouldn't have been surprised that the subtlety of my metaphor was lost on those disciples. They did not get it. They attacked me, they rejected me, as if I didn't know how expensive the jar of perfume was. Look, I may not be as practical as Martha, but I do live in her household. She wanted to sell that jar ages ago. Think of all the good we could have done with it. No, I knew how expensive it was. I had kept it. But I don't think they saw him. The disciples just didn't get who he was. Look, here's what I saw. It's common for a holy man to heal. That's what they do, that's how they get their power. They just go around healing people. It's not common for a holy man to risk his life to save a friend, but that is what Jesus did for my brother Lazarus. There were enemies on either side. They wanted to stone him in every village that he passed through. God only knows how he made it to our house safely. He risked his life to save my brother. Look, it's common everywhere for subordinates to serve their superiors, right? The women serve the men, the children serve the grown-ups, the slaves serve the masters, and everybody serves the head of the household. It's like a nursery rhyme. It's just what you do, you don't question it. It's not common for a master teacher to serve food and drink to his disciples. It's not at all common for a master teacher to wash the feet of his disciples, but that is what Jesus did. As if he had turned the world upside down, the household on its head. It's common for men to try to fix things, am I right? What's broken? Give it to me. Give me a hammer. I'll make it better. Look, it's not at all common for a healthy and whole and charismatic, powerful young man to give up his power to the point of death, to allow himself to be crucified like some common criminal, like a nobody without fighting back. But that is what Jesus did. And I wonder how the disciples could not have seen it. When he was so close to the end, how could they not have seen that he was going to go all the way? The lid of the jar was broken off. There was no going back. He was going to pour it all out. But I think maybe it just makes sense to me. Maybe they just didn't get it, and maybe, just maybe, it makes more sense to a woman. Women, after all, are used to being broken for the sake of others. We are broken every day. It's a woman's work. We break our backs carrying water from the well. We've done it for centuries upon centuries. We break our gaze, we avert our eyes, we look submissively at the ground, we must. If we get married, and you'll understand I've tried to avoid it, if we get married from the first break on her wedding night to the last baby she pushes out, a wife's body is regularly broken. She breaks herself open to raise a child that doesn't even live. She does it again and again, the liturgy of her life. We are broken for our children, broken for our men, broken for no reason at all, and then they call us the weaker vessel. We are broken because there's simply too much stress to hold, broken for love, broken for war. We are broken down. And then comes a man who would be broken for us in our stead, who risks his life to save my brother, who breaks down and cries and who would say that he would offer his own life to be broken and shared. And now, doesn't it seem so small? 1 pound of perfume, expensive perfume, yes, 1 year's wages. What is 1 year's wages compared to years upon lifetimes of brokenness, brokenness, nothing but brokenness, until he came and turned the world upside down for us? So how can you be surprised when I pour out my love, when I break it open and pour it out to the very last drop? There is nothing that can compare to the gratitude he deserves. And I've come to realize that Lazarus was not the only one who came back to life that day.